The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode is brought to you by Upstart and MyBookie. More on that later. Let's get into the do.
You're listening to The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We're over here at Studio Jeans doing it at your mom's house. I'm Ryan Sickler. Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. Go to the website, sign up for the email list. You'll be among the first to know updates, all that good stuff. This website here for the show, thehoneydewpodcast.com. You can go there, find out all the information for The Honeydew, social media links, merch, all that good stuff. Denver. Coming to Comedy Works downtown, November 21st through the 23rd. You guys been asking me to come to Denver. I'm super excited to come back. I love Comedy Works, and I'll be there. I'll be there Thursday through Saturday, November 21st through the 23rd. Go to my website now and get your tickets. I want to see you all out there in Denver. Let's have a good time. And as I always say, thank you to everybody out there listening and reaching out. I really appreciate it. The best way to help the show is to engage with the sponsors. That's how you do it. You guys have been fantastic about that, so thank you. And if you're new to the show, this show is about highlighting the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. And today's storyteller, I'm very excited to have here for the first time on The Honeydew, Tony Hinchcliffe,
hey,
everybody. Welcome to The Honeydew, Tony.
Wow, look at that.
There's that audience.
Exactly. I'm excited to be here.
You hear it?
Feel yeah, it? They sound good back there. It sounds like there's applause coming from that little closet.
Well, I'm very stoked to have you on here. Before we get into anything, please plug, promote, whatever you'd like.
Well, I mean, I have my own live podcast that's all about stand-up comedy and the people trying to do it. That's called Kill Tony, and we do that live all around the world, going to Australia in the middle of October and traveling the world with it and selling out shows and having a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's a big, crazy
right
live experience, so if it's ever around your city, go check it out live. And TonyHinchcliffe.com to catch all my stand-up tour dates, and I'm just happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you, man. I know we had you on the Crab Feast before, and you told some great stories about growing up and your childhood, and I would love to dig into some more of that
stuff.
Let's
do it.
So just tell everybody originally where you're from, and go ahead and get into it.
Well, here we go. Okay. So I'm originally from a place called Youngstown, Ohio, which, especially when I was growing up there, was famous for being extremely dangerous. And
crime?
Yes. Yeah. At the time, it was the crime capital of the country. It was the murder capital of the world when I was growing up there, per capita.
It's just like the, so, I hear
so
you
it's
on that. Like,
which
but
means
80s?
This was the late 80s, early 90s.
Wow.
It was just unbelievable. A murder a day, at least, in a city with, like, I don't know, 40, 50,000 people.
A murder a day.
A murder
Damn.
A day. And so, and I grew up, see, a lot of people will say they're from Youngstown, but they're from Boardman or Girard or one of these very, what I always considered rich suburbs of Youngstown. But I was from the actual, like, most ghetto part where nobody anywhere around, like, my lifestyle lived. Like, it was very, you know, just extreme white trash. Like, I was one of the only kids around my, not only was I one of the only white kids around my neighborhood, I was the only white kid that had, like, shoes and socks on and, like, a shirt. Like, it was, like, very ratty, like, exactly how you picture, like, a lot of those, like, you see those, like, New World Star videos where there's, like, a giant fat guy walking with a midget who's walking with, like, someone with, like, weird butt cheeks or something. Like, it's like, yeah. That was my entire...
That was your street.
That's what I thought, like, normal life was like for the longest time. And my whole world was just a World Star video. And
how many brothers and sisters?
two brothers, two sisters, but they're all much, much older than me.
So the closest sibling
is 12 years older than me.
Whoa,
and then 14, 16, and 18 years older than me.
You share the same parents?
No. Okay. I have a different dad than all of them.
All right.
Yeah, which is its own crazy story, because my mom was married to their dad still while she was banging my dad, who was married to another woman, and they had kids together.
Let's go back to this for 1 second. Yeah. Did the older siblings live with you in Youngstown, or were they at the age at that point where they were pretty much out
couple of them were out. Actually, I'm such white trash that my mom and my oldest sister were pregnant at the same time.
Is that true, dude?
Yeah, there's pictures of my mom and my oldest sister, like, back to back, just like, you know, they thought it was the coolest thing.
Yeah, like, you believe it? How old was your sister when she was pregnant?
Well, she's 18 years older than me. That makes her 18.
She was 18 exactly.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. This is real Youngstown shit. You can't even get pregnant after 18 in Youngstown.
I mean, she'd have to be 18. You're pregnant. You're the one in your mom's belly.
And my mom had her when she was 18.
So you're an uncle to a nephew that is the same age.
I'm an uncle to a niece that is like 2 months younger than me.
Oh, younger.
Yeah.
All right. You got a right age.
Yeah. So.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, real. I'm like Italian, but I'm super white trash at the same time. So it's a fine art. You know what I mean? So they were mostly out of the house, and the other ones were pretty much going off to college. You know, one was 12, and another was 14, and another was 16. But I mean, they were, you know what I mean? By the time I'm 3, 4, 5, 6, they're all gone. Yeah.
So your mom was married to their dad,
right?
Your other two siblings.
Now they weren't really. I guess they were. Yeah, I guess they were sleeping in different beds, from what I've been told. Like, and it's the same, I guess, on my dad's side. Like, it's old school.
But
Italian.
Was he married to your dad?
Yeah.
So both married, both cheating on their spouses. Yeah. You're that love child.
Not only were they cheating, my friend, but they were cheating on each other. They were cheating on their significant others for 11 years. Before my mom got pregnant with me.
11 years.
11 years. It wasn't like some one night stand.
And no one knew?
No one. Well, I mean, like, I think
they just didn't give a shit.
Yeah, I don't think they gave a shit. Like, my older brothers and sisters, from what I understand, didn't even like their dad, because he was a very heavy drinker or whatever. So, like, my dad was like the cool guy that would come over and fucking make spaghetti and fuck my mom. And everybody was just happy about it. They're like, oh, that guy's cool. Makes spaghetti and fucks our mom.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. So, I guess what happened.
So, do they get married?
Hell no.
Your parents never got married.
No, okay. No. I'm a super bastard. I'm like the original bastard. Like, being a bad, like, Game of Thrones made that shit cool, but for the first 29 years of my life, that wasn't cool at all.
So,
I was a fatherless. Trash. All right,
that's what I want to ask you. So your mom has you,
yeah,
and she's in Youngstown. Yeah. Where's your dad? Also in Youngstown? Or?
Well, now, yes. Here's what's crazy is that, yes, my dad was in Youngstown, but this is where things get really messed up, because my mom actually lied to me and told me that, and she got the siblings to go in on it with her. And she told me that my dad worked a lot and he worked out of town. I think they said he was a truck driver, something to like, let my little boy imagination run wild with, rationalize why he only visits like once every, when I was a little baby, I remember he was there a lot. This is also what they remind me of. And then as I got like, I don't know, maybe two or three, maybe it was like once a month. And then it was like, you know, once every couple months, and it sort of spread out. So when I was young, they told me like, oh, you know, his, you know, they gave me a fake last name. They're like, oh, his name's Joe Smith, and, you know, he works a lot and blah, 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 blah.
Is your, his Hinchcliffe his name?
No, okay. No. Hinchcliffe is the first guy's name, because my mom wanted me to have the same name as my older brothers and sisters, because that's like our family. You know how like trashy families are like, we stick together no matter what.
So Hinchcliffe,
we're not half brothers and sisters. We're real brothers and sisters. Say it again. Like, it's just like normal super trash shit.
So Hinchcliffe is the guy that was leaving when your dad would come over and make spaghetti and fuck your mom.
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
That's who you're named after.
Absolutely. I'm named after that fucking idiot. Hey, I love that there's spaghetti in the fridge and your pussy smells like pasta. This is incredible.
So you all have the last name Hinchcliffe.
Yeah.
Are you close with your dad's kids from that marriage?
Well, by sort of like crazy coincidences and stories, yes, I ended up getting close with them. Not one of them, but the other one, yes. I think that the son from that side has like an issue, like a jealousy issue.
Do they know who you are and what you do? I mean, it's kind of hard to hide
at
this point.
They do now, and it's sort of crazy because... Well, let me just tell you the rest of the story so that you can understand. All right. So my mom told me that was the story. Like, my dad travels a lot. My dad works a lot. And then I think it was like either, I don't know, first, second, no later than third grade. I was on the school bus one day and I noticed that across the street from my one buddy's house who we were picking up, I looked across the street and in the driveway was this, white, I think it was a Bronco or a Ford something, but whatever it was, pretty sure it was a Bronco. And I would see this white Bronco, and it looked a lot like the car that my dad would drive when he would come and visit. You know, I'd always be waiting for him, and he'd always be late. So, like, this arrival of him coming to see me was always a really big deal. And I noticed this car across from my buddy's house, and then I noticed it again, and I noticed it again. So I took mental note of it and the license plate, and next time my dad came and visited, I matched it up. And then,
how old do you think you are at this point?
Again, this is like no later than, I mean, second or third grade. I would say 9, 10.
That's really good. Okay.
Right around then. And yeah, they were very shocked when what happened, which is after my dad left that next time, after I matched it up, I mentioned to my mom, I go, hey, I noticed that dad's car is in this one house's driveway a lot when we pick up, you know, Jeff Lewis on the school bus.
He was that close?
Yeah, literally right across the street. And, well, from my buddy, who was,
right.
Yes,
but
only
blocks away.
Yeah, seven,
yeah,
eight
you're on
blocks
the same
away.
Bus route.
Exactly,
yeah.
Same bus, same school. And my mom, like, turned pale white, and she sat me down, and she told me everything then. She decided to stop the lies then.
Whoa.
And break down everything to this 10-year-old boy.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. That's how someone like me gets made. You're wondering, like, well, what the fuck's wrong with him? Oh, there it is. Horrible. The worst kind of childhood trauma. You just find out that your mom, who's been raising you, has been lying to you for 10 years about who made you and how you were made and the fact that, you know, you don't have a normal life at all and you're a super bastard and you're not even related. You're completely related to your brothers and sisters and all this crazy stuff. And
that's when you also find out then that your dad has this other wife and family,
right.
or other woman and family, or
right.
whatever.
Two kids and a
Holy
wife,
shit.
And they're old school Italians, so they don't want to get divorced.
And where do those kids go to school?
They were much older, too.
Okay.
They had already grown up, and actually they went to the same high school that I went to, but they were there like, I don't know, 12, 14 years before that.
How old was your mom when she had you?
She was 38 when she had.
Okay.
Me. Yeah.
So in her 20s, obviously, young 20s when she had your other siblings.
Yeah.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So what happens when you hear this?
Well, I mean, it was very traumatizing. There was a lot to it. Like, she ended up calling him. He ended up coming back and this and that. And we had
He's like, I'll walk over.
Right. Oh my god, it hurts.
It's so hurting
the back of my spinal cord right now. That is like one of the greatest jokes I've ever heard in my life. Oh my god, that's so funny. I'll walk over. Yeah, he was right fucking there the whole time, this asshole. So yeah, it was a lot to handle, and they told me, you know, and here's where shit gets really interesting, as if that wasn't, you know, crazy enough of a story, is that at the time in Youngstown, there was a lot of organized crime and a lot of you know, this is old school stuff. This was a long time ago. This was, you know, right as, I guess, you know, Goodfellas just came out and like all this stuff sort of really being, what's it called? You know, not showcased,
glorified.
But like glorified. And it was a crazy time because it turns out that my dad was involved in some of that stuff. It was just a natural thing. You know what I mean? You're friends and you have a restaurant and all this stuff. And you know what I mean? It's just a natural thing, much more common than we can sort of imagine, especially back then, especially in Youngstown.
So what was your dad's profession? What did he do?
He was a restaurant owner.
Okay, he owned a restaurant. Right. And what about your mom?
Well, my mom actually, she ended up running the running numbers. She ended up running an entire illegal lottery because that's basically what my dad did for her instead of child support. He's like, all right, well, you can run the entire...
I'll let you work for
it. I'll let you run the entire fucking Youngstown
skim
numbers.
Off that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think my dad was more into like running the entire gambling, like betting on sport. Like, I mean, running all these people that were just betting and all this stuff. I don't
really...
So
both your parents were on the other side of the law.
Exactly.
All right.
So one of the things was, is they didn't want me sort of like talking about who my real dad is because he was sort of famous in the city. It was for my own safety. It was for their safety. They didn't want his super Italian, you know, reputation to be messed up because if you have a... if you make a kid, you know, as an Italian who's married with another woman, it's like all this shit that maybe his bosses wouldn't like to know that, and that's messed up. And so it's like they're like basically like, shut your mouth and, you know, don't tell anybody anything. But that was almost impossible, and that was almost a massive challenge to me. Like, well,
I mean, you just got all this new information. Don't you want to tell everybody?
Exactly. Especially imagine a year or two later when at that point it's boiling up and you're making friends with your friends' dads and moms, and like they ask questions.
Hey,
like,
what's
so
your dad
your
do?
Dad, right. Yeah. Yeah, I never see him around. Well, yeah.
Well, how often, now that you've discovered the secret, mm-hmm. how often are you now seeing your dad? More, less?
No, it's less. It really started to ruin things. Every time I would make a discovery or say something or leak something, it always just hurt our relationship. It's great now, but yeah, back then it was rough because I was also getting in trouble a lot, and I would do dumb things. Like, I would like make really, who would guess that I would make really over the top bad jokes that I shouldn't have made. Like, I remember one time in school there was this teacher who hated me, and he was so mean to me, and then one day, I can't remember what the joke was exactly. Like, we had all just found out what like pedophiles were. Like, we had just found out. Like, we're like 12 or 13,
yeah.
And literally we just think it's the funniest thing. And I end up making this joke, like, and we're all cracking up too. So it's like me and a group of guys, and we're just dying of laughter. And I'm like, yeah, my dad molests me all the time. And we just thought it was the funniest thing. But this teacher who hated me heard that, Mr. Gil Martin, and he decided to like make an example out of me. So he's like, well,
as if your dad's molesting hadn't already made enough of an example.
Right. He's like, well, I'm going to teach you a lesson. You can't joke about things like that. And I'm going to teach you a lesson, dude, because anytime you make a joke about a parent or someone molesting you, I have to report it to the children's services.
Oh, shit.
And so Mr. Gil Martin, thinking he was a badass motherfucker, thinking he was going to break me and teach me a lesson about life, right?
He doesn't know who's about to show up either.
Guess who's about to come walking over?
I'll be right there. Let me get my flip-flops on.
He called the children's services.
Oh,
and
no.
Fucking they called my mom, and she's freaking out, and they end up having to call my dad. They have to call him and this and that. And you know, I explained to my dad, and he's no dummy. You know what I mean? Like, he knew exactly what the hell happened. He'd be laughing just like we are about the pedophile stuff and this and that if he was here today, you know, sitting here watching. And because he gets it. So I told him, I'm like, we were making jokes. We were all just laughing about this dumb thing. I didn't say really that you molested. We were completely kidding. And I think he knew exactly what was going on there and that Mr. Gilmartin wanted to make a fool out of us and teach me a lesson. Well, long story short, Mr. Gilmartin didn't show up to work again after that.
Is that true?
Cut to a month or two later, and my mom and I are at the local grocery store, and guess who's stocking Cantaloupes?
No.
Yep.
Stocking Honeydews?
Yeah. Mr. Gilmartin.
That would be the perfect job.
Over there, just making sure they're ripe and putting them down.
Nobody's buying these things.
With a little produce apron on. I mean, no pride left whatsoever.
He's probably like, I had tenure, goddammit.
Yeah, I mean.
He went from teaching to stocking the shelves.
Yeah, man. You can't, he knew what he did, too. He knew what he was doing. He fucked up. You don't do that.
What kind of stuff did you later? No, you definitely don't fucking do that.
He'll never do it again. I promise you that.
What kind of stuff did you know your dad got into? Like, what was he doing? Owner of a restaurant, little Italian spot?
Yeah.
And was it frequented by all those guys, or was it a front?
I think maybe a little bit of both back in the day. Now he's legit, you know what I mean? Now I think that they've got that whole thing, you know what I mean? That's just old school stuff. I can talk about it even. That's how safe I feel about it, that I can even talk out loud about it. But, you know, now it's just a legitimate little Italian restaurant with unbelievable food. He's an unbelievable chef.
Really?
I mean, fucking believable. So he's just incredible.
Is he still in Ohio? Yeah.
Still in Youngstown, and he's just that type of guy where it's like, you know, he can make literally, I mean, like his peppers in oil. Like, I mean, something that simple is just so,
right.
You know how the best stuff's just simple.
Always.
A bagel or a little piece of pizza. It's like always, even the fucking, I tried the Popeye's spicy chicken sandwich, and I'm like, wow, this is a lot of hype. All right, I'll wait in line. Took Jeremiah because we're both fat asses. And we waited in this line, and the whole thing's nothing. It's just a chicken breast with two little pickles. And it was unbelievably delicious. But my point is like, the best things are so simple. Whereas they're comparing it to Chick-fil-A, which is a fair assessment, by the way. The thing is delicious. But Chick-fil-A has all these different things on their chicken sandwich. Whereas this hype machine just has these two little slivers of pickle and one doppel of spicy sauce. Anyway... And he can make unbelievable stuff, too. You know, the best pastas and this and that. He's got an unbelievable gift. His son, who I don't communicate with, is like one of the bigger chefs, executive chefs anywhere. He works in Vegas at a very, 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 very fancy place.
Okay.
He started as the executive chef and went on to like own it and then own a chain of restaurants.
Wow.
So, yeah.
All right.
They're both really big into that. I think part of him trying to be an amazing chef and run places is like him trying to like, you know, impress his dad.
Right.
Which is probably a never ending fun thing that I never had to worry about. Hey. I'm out to impress mom.
I was going to say, so are you super tight with mom then?
Super tight.
And what is 10-year-old angry Tony? What do you start getting into? What happens when you start finding this out? And also, do you find yourself wanting to go to your friend's house more often that lives right across the street just so you can be there and see, or is it the opposite?
No, it was the opposite. That whole street sort of became like a haunted like land to me. I didn't enjoy those parts of the bus trips anymore. Like, it was like just really depressing. I didn't realize
every day you're going by that. Monday to Friday.
Yeah, it was so close.
And you don't have siblings your age you can even relate to or talk to about this shit.
Well, I mean, it was pretty open discussion when it would happen. You know, there was always
your sister's nursing and shit. She's like, listen, I'm about to graduate. I got a baby on my titties.
Yeah, and you know, like. It was a thing that was pretty openly discussed when you could discuss it when they were around. But it was very, you know, just different, man. Very different. It was weird. Some of my friends, closest buddies who I would tell their parents. And their parents would say, that's not true. Tony's lying to you. That's not his dad. You know what I mean? That's impossible. I know that family.
I was going to say, he's right. entrenched in that community for years.
Exactly. So, like, one of the weirder parts was just, like, I seemed like a liar sometimes as a little kid to some of my best friends who literally are looking me in the eyes.
Parents are now wary
of
you.
Right, exactly. Like, why would he lie about that? Maybe he'll lie and say we did something, or you know what I mean, whatever. So it was sort of a very just weird way to
grow up. They killed the teacher.
Yeah.
They killed him. Killed his career.
Yeah.
Killed his career, bro.
Once you're stacking cantaloupes, you're dead. And, yeah, it just, I think it wires you differently, and it makes you a weird person,
it
you know what I mean?
Does,
and I was
yeah.
a real misbehavior. I mean,
that's what I want to get into.
Real
like,
bad.
What were you
scene.
Doing?
I
How
was
were you
doing
acting
everything.
Out?
I was doing absolutely everything. They had special contracts made for me to where if I do
Who's
one
they?
More thing,
school?
The school, yeah.
Really?
I mean, you know, they had like, your school had like what? Like conduct grades, right? You'd start off with like 100 points and you get like 5 point demerits or whatever if you
no.
do something bad. No, you didn't have that?
No, we just, you Bunch started of... with zero and
oh.
you earned what you got.
Oh,
yeah.
So your thing went up. Yeah, ours went down and I went into the negative many times. Like, and that's a weird thing because it's quarterly thing and you know I was just getting in trouble every single day, almost every single class,
and
every teacher hated me, so they had no leeway, right? That and everything. I was trying to make the entire class laugh at the teacher's expense. I would wait until they said something, or you know, God help you if there was any penis joke I could make or hint to, or a butthole or anything stupid. As a kid, I would find it, I would latch on, and then I would start my strategic planning. Like, I would ask the teacher a question. I'd always, you know, look interested. Maybe this is...
Like, okay,
I always wanted,
Tony's turning a corner.
I always wanted the teacher to think that. Yeah. That's exactly the whole setup. If they think a joke's coming, it wasn't even
right,
worth
yeah,
it to me.
Yeah.
I'd be like, nah, the window's closed. Let's move on. But, like, if I really thought, like, oh, Tony, you have a question? I'd be like, oh, you fucking idiot. Ah! And then hit a home run. But that was that. I just lived for that. I lived.
You spent
for
a lot of time in the principal's office and stuff.
I used to eat lunch in the principal's office because I would get in so much trouble in the cafeteria that by the time that everything, a lot of times when it came together, there's like, I'm in the yearbook eating lunch in the principal's office.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's great.
And they just knew, like, I was like a highlighted, I'm sort of a, as sad as this sounds, I'm sort of a legend.
Yeah,
in Youngstown,
have like, they embraced who you are now? Like, you ever hear from
quite
teachers?
Yet. I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for it. The principal of this of my high school now was my history teacher at the time, and I loved him, and we hit it off. He got me. He was one of those guys that would let me be funny at the beginning or end of class, and like he got it. He was a very way ahead of his time, dude, and now he. Obviously, he's moved on to be the head of the entire school. And so we communicate once every few years. I'll give him a call. We'll talk
That's
for three
nice.
Minutes. I'll just yeah. tell him, hey, things are going great, man. Thanks again. So happy for, you know, you being one of the good ones and blah, 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 blah. And yeah, so that part's cool. But during the school parts, I mean, it was just horrendous. These teachers absolutely hated me. They don't care if you don't... It's just like on a sports team. You know what I mean? If you don't have a dad there, you're nothing. They don't care about you. They care about their job and what people think of them. And, mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Witherspoon is here, so we're going to put in Billy Witherspoon, even though Tony is an elite second baseman.
You just need a range on this fucking kid.
Turning two.
Five-tool
like it's
player
nothing.
Over here.
But you got old fucking one-armed Billy Witherspoon over here.
With a dad.
Yeah, with a dad. It's like, oh, you don't have an arm, but you have a dad. Okay, I guess you could play ahead of me. So, you know, that part's tough. All that stuff was tough because all these parents, they want to be parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They want to be there for their kids. And they were there every game and every basketball game and every baseball game and every wrestling match and all these things. And it was just like, maybe my mom will be there, but probably not. Because she was really depressed, too. She got involved in a hit-and-run car accident right after I was born. She got T-boned at an intersection by a guy who had just stolen a car.
Oh, shit.
And she just got slammed. She was going through a green light, and the next thing you know, she's rolling eight times over
Flipped
and over again.
Eight times?
Yeah.
Holy
Degenerative
shit.
Spinal condition from that, which left her very depressed and in a lot of pain. So she would basically be sort of just chilling and sitting up in bed, chain smoking cigarettes, drinking iced tea, waiting to yell at me when I got home every single day because the teachers had already called in
what I had done that day.
I got, you know, I got beat up a few times real good, got taught a lesson about getting my shit together.
From your mom?
Got to get the belt, dude.
Your mom hit you with a belt after that car accident?
Absolutely.
That's impressive. I gotta tell you, that's impressive.
She would summon the demons.
She was disciplined.
Definitely. Definitely. And, you know, you just learn, life a different way. You got to think backwards to see what's ahead of you sometimes. And that was one of the things that happened there for sure.
So how does it change as you get into high school and you start getting a little older, stronger, driving? Are you finding yourself leaving more, escaping? What's happening?
Well, really, I just wanted to at that point, once I started to get older, come around the corner, like 14, 15, 16, 17, I really just wanted to be normal. Mm-hmm. I was looking for some type of structure. I wanted to get into a good college and I wanted to, but I was doing nothing to do it, but I wanted that. You know what I mean? And I wanted some normalcy to life as I saw it through my close friends' viewpoints.
And during this time, your dad, does he come to see games? Does he come to nothing?
No, nothing.
Not even holidays you're seeing him? Nothing.
Holidays I would. And that's one of the interesting things about my relationship with his two kids.
Okay.
Is like, I think a lot of the anger that they held on to was the fact that their dad would be missing for 3 hours every Christmas day, and they never knew why. And every, just little holidays, he'd be gone for 2 or 3 hours.
And he would come to your mom's and hang out with you?
Yeah, yeah. And my mom, since he didn't really know anything about me, one of the interesting things that they would do is he would always get me the best present because he wasn't there, and he obviously had more money than my mom. But the way that he would do that was because he didn't know anything about me or what I liked. He would give my mom extra money, and she would get the best present from him, and she would put it outside. I found this out later. She would put it outside around the corner on the front stoop, wrapped. And he would get out of the car, pick up the present, knock on the door, and come in. This is all stuff that
is a fucking fucked up Santa Claus.
I know, man. And
how much on your mom, too, to even do that? Because your mom could have simply said, fuck you. You go buy your son a present and bring it over here.
She's a legend.
Wow.
She wanted to make him look good. So that I didn't feel as bad, so that there's at least
that's unselfish.
Yeah, it's incredible. And she's just a machine.
It's shit like that that blows me away. And especially being a parent, it just continually reminds me to try and be that better person because it matters to your kids in the long run. You're eating a shit sandwich.
Yeah.
But a good friend of mine told me one time, don't nibble on it. Just eat the whole shit sandwich at once.
That's right.
Just get it the fuck over.
Put it in a blender and take it down in a shot glass. Hell yeah.
Let's take a quick break to tell you about our first sponsor, Upstart. As most of us have found out the hard way, getting into debt is easy and getting out is hard, especially if your credit score isn't great. Thankfully now there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that knows you're more than just your credit score and offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high interest credit card debt. You don't need to be out there paying 17 and 20% on these credit cards or whatever they're jacking you for these days. You could save a lot of money not paying that high interest rate. You can go, and the truth is Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and your job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. I had a friend of mine reach out to me, tell me she's looking into it right now, and the interest rate they gave her was way lower than the credit card stuff. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you, and they understand that. They make it fast, simple, and easy to check your rate in just a few minutes. And the best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. The next day! Over 300,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/honeydew to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes, and it will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is MyBookie. If you want to put your extensive sports knowledge to the test, you get it done at MyBookie. With the NFL in full swing and the NBA and the NHL seasons upon us, it's time to get off the sideline and get in on the action with MyBookie. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be huge. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to MyBookie. No one gives you more ways to win. If you're tired of watching the games from the couch with nothing to gain, MyBookie wants to get your mind off everything else and back on the game. And the best part is if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. That's right. If you put in $1,000, they're giving you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit you can use on all your favorite picks. Use promo code HONEYDEW, H-O-N-E-Y-D-E-W, to activate the offer. That's promo code HONEYDEW to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. Now back to the dew. So what about his wife? Did she ever resent you?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to skip over this. So fast forward, now I'm, we'll say 19 years old, okay, and I'm bartending at another Italian restaurant in Youngstown. Never worked for any of my dad's Italian restaurants.
Oh, he had more than one?
No.
Oh, gotcha.
Well,
he
did have two, but not at the same time. Mm-hmm. But this was at a place that wasn't his, and it was a fancy Italian joint, one of the other few fancy Italian joints in town, and I was bartending at the age of 19, which tells you something about Youngstown.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
And there's a high school reunion going on, and it is the Ursuline High School, I think, I don't know, either 30-year reunion or something crazy like that. And I'm bartending, you know, I'm busy. So like an open bar, one of those high school reunions, and it's like you're just slinging drinks and whatever. And I come up to this one lady who's waiting for a drink at the bar, and I'm like, hey, what can I get for you? And she looks at me like she is seeing a ghost.
And do you look like your dad, by the way?
A fucking ghost. Not only at the time did I look like my dad, I looked like my dad that she fell in love with. The 19-year-old fucking exactly the same guy. And I mean,
is this her first time seeing you?
It is her first time seeing
you. And yours as well?
My first time seeing her, I had no idea who she
was. Right, there's no Facebook or any of this
shit. I would find out immediately because after I go, hey, what do you want to drink? She goes, is your father?
That's what she said.
Blank and blank. Yeah.
Like, I don't know how to make that.
I mean, no hesitation. Right.
I'm only 19.
Oh, yes. One Italian bastard coming up here. Here you go. There's
that's her response. Is he your father?
I remember it like it was yesterday. It was one of those moments where it was like, ah. You know, just this is a woman who heard rumors of her father perhaps having another kid.
And 19 years later.
Probably defended the shit out of him, saying there's no way, those are just dirty rumors. He never admitted to it. He denied it to the core. You know what I mean? This and that. But then all of a sudden, here he is. She's looking at a blue-eyed version of the man that she fell in love with fucking whatever, 30 years before, whatever it was. And I just told her the truth. I go, yep, that's my dad, and you must be. And it was just on like Donkey Kong.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Yep. Was she friendly? Or?
Very friendly.
Oh,
she was
nice.
Absolutely
all
awesome.
Right,
she wanted. She was the one. That was the finishing touch on me getting to meet
my
other
bad
siblings.
For you.
Absolutely.
You're a kid without a father, and she's got two kids. She must know what that's like.
Absolutely. And they had their
So
dad.
He would disappear on Christmas for those 3 hours, but she didn't know either then.
Right. I gotta
so it wasn't
go
like
work.
Your mom that was in on
Somebody
this.
Somebody left the fucking pizza dough out of the goddamn cooler. I gotta go get more dough or else we won't be able to make the pizza on the fucking...
It's always on the holiday.
You know, Christmas Day is one of our busiest days. I gotta get the dough. You know what I mean? Whatever wow. dumb excuse I'm sure he would come up with annually for having to not be there on Christmas for a few hours while he came over and would play fucking a train set or whatever. We'd do a coloring book and then
out of there.
He's just gone. Yeah. And I wouldn't change things for the world, though. As silly as it sounds, like, I feel like a lot of people are like, oh, okay, sure you wouldn't. But, like, yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't. You see, you know what it is. I mean, you see these people with little perfect American pie lives, and they come out boring as fuck.
Like, and especially, also, like, twisted as fuck.
Yeah.
Most of those people that have the perfect life mm-hmm. have, I mean, you don't even have to dig that deep.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just start crying all the time right. for no reason. It's like, oh, you've never felt pain before. That's why you're yep. crying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I live this.
Right.
My dad's house is right there.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's not here. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
Watch this. Baseball.
I'm going to hit it with a fucking right. baseball.
And he's not going to throw it back because he doesn't play catch with me.
So what? How do you fucking continue to work this? Like, all I would want to do is talk to that lady, especially if she was nice to me. I would be like, oh, right. my God, can we please talk?
I mean, it was, there's also, you know, it's again,
how did it
so
change things for you, though?
It really didn't.
With
I got
her?
To, I got to, it changed things with her because I didn't know her before and now I know her and
does she
felt
want you
bad.
To be with the kid, meet
she
her
She wanted
kids?
Me to meet the whole family. And then once she went to my dad and was like, you motherfucker, this fucking kid hasn't had a dad and you've been telling me that this wasn't real and blah, 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 blah. Now he's got to meet your whole fucking family. You better introduce him to the whole family and meet his grand is you know, not grandparents yeah. but great aunts and uncles and cousins, a shit ton of them. And you know, that's when I got to meet my sister, and she was really cool, and it was really awesome. It was one of those cool things. Now here's the catch, is that my mom, who takes great pride in raising me and this and that, is naturally obviously a competitive person, and I think she was very happy that I was getting to meet my dad's side of the family and all this stuff, but she was also like, she also, as a person who, you know, tremendously loved my father, very sort of like cautious about this, you know, this woman.
But also she's working for him all this time and his wife doesn't know that either.
Right.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Yeah, she was out of the loop. This
Everything
is one of those...
was just a secret.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. And, you know, you watch the...
Very mafia.
Exactly. You watch The Sopranos or any of that, and what do those wives know? What do the chicks
Everything
that they're
and
banging
nothing.
Know? Right.
Yes.
Mostly nothing.
Yeah.
Mostly fucking nothing. Like, I mean, you know, look at Henry Hill, right, in Goodfellas. Let's say that the brunette chick that he's banging at the end, who he's doing all that cocaine stuff with, let's just say that that's running numbers instead of...
Right.
Running coke.
Yeah.
And there you have it. I mean, like, what the fuck does she know? Nothing. He comes over, he fucks her, he does the deal, and then that's it. And I think that was more along the lines of the type of thing that was happening back in my day. But yeah, I think it gives you a certain amount of I don't know what. I mean, there was a lot of depression that followed right out of high school, and a real low I hit, extreme.
Did you go to college?
Yep.
Where?
Ohio State, but only for like a few months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really hit bottom. I had a really great job. I mean, a job that paid really well at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse as a food runner. And I was making like, I don't know, $400 or $500 a night at the time, 18 years old, Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
And I didn't live on campus. I lived off campus, which was a really big mistake because I was just, I had a giant big screen TV and I was smoking cigars and drinking a ton of whiskey and absorbing art for the first time in my life is really what I was doing. I was smoking a lot of pot. I didn't realize that art was even like a thing. Like, my older brothers were always sort of like, oh, that's pussy shit. Oh, movies are for creeps. You know what I mean? Like, it was weird. It was just weird how I was introduced to art. It never really hit me until sort of like right after high school. Hit me before Man on the Moon, between eighth grade and freshman year of high school. Changed everything, sort of, but I still really wasn't absorbing art. I just knew that something about that, like, I became obsessed with Andy Kaufman. I was already obsessed with Jim Carrey, obviously, like everybody my age at that time was, but that movie really like flipped a switch for me. I started going to libraries and researching Andy Kaufman, and then, you know, I'd go off on these tangents about the Comedy Store and about this and that and the history of comedy. But I still didn't really think of it as a real option or anything like that. And, you know, hitting that low in Columbus again, I think that really helped me too.
'Cause it's what, like, are you doing during your low lows?
Really, it was almost like, I was almost like a heroin addict, but I was just smoking pot and drinking. You're like
staying
an animal.
In,
oh yeah, staying and... in, only working, not being able to really do much.
No dating, no social life.
Now, I had just broken up with my high school sweetheart, and that was sort of heartbreaking. Really missed her, and really, really liked her at the time, and just trying to plow through it. Like, it was a real, real rock bottom. I mean, real depression.
And all this small circle at the same time. Everybody still lives where they were living the whole time. You don't ever run into your dad or cross paths or, I mean, how does that even, you ran into his wife. How does that not even happen in that little area?
I know. Well, he doesn't really do anything like that.
It's just restaurant,
right,
home.
That's it. He's at the restaurant all day, morning to night, and home. That's it. Sleep, get up, do it again. He's a machine. And so none of that happened. And plus, I was in Columbus at the time. They're still up in Youngstown. And yeah. And then that's it. I go out. I visit my brother in L.A. He was living out here.
What was he doing?
He was umpiring baseball games and being a bartender. And
he just did. Is that what he moved here for?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what he was doing in
just
Columbus.
To get away?
Yeah, and so he moved out here just to get away because the weather's beautiful, he said, and I came out to visit, fell in love, went back, saved some money, came back, and he let me crash on his futon for a couple months while I started stand-up, and the rest is history.
Then so you never did stand-up in Ohio anywhere or anything like that? All here?
Yeah, I started at the Comedy Store. The first time I was ever at a comedy club, I signed up for the open mic at the Comedy Store on a Sunday and was lucky enough to get pulled out, and I had prepared months for my first three-minute set, and I blanked out when I hit stage.
No.
Yeah, but I talked about it, so it really helped.
I had
no idea what I was doing, but I did the absolute right thing. I literally go like, I forget what I was going to talk about. And like everybody else, the first 12 open micers, obviously, at the super competitive Comedy Store, were all doing these jokes one after the other with nothing felt real. But you know what I mean? They're doing jokes. But mine felt totally real and had no jokes. You know, I just kept milking it. It basically... is still my style, sort of, to almost just do crowd work, sort of, with myself. Like, if I want to have fun, like, really just talk about how I really feel, really, in the moment. In that moment, I couldn't believe it. I had prepared for months for a three-minute set. I have notes and notes and notes. I sat at a park once a day for 3 hours a day preparing for this moment. Now I can't remember anything. The whole room's dying. Comedians just like, what a fucking idiot.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they could feel how real and raw it was. They had never seen me before. Couldn't possibly get away with having this set twice. So it really like cracked the room and I fell in love. And that was it. The rest is history. I've been there almost every night since that I've been in L.A. hanging out at the Comedy Store.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of my stuff in my childhood, a lot of it, helped me get through the rough patches of becoming a stand-up comedian, because the way I looked at it was, this is better than anything.
Right.
Struggling to become a professional stand-up comedian is the easiest shit I've done in my life up
until
this point.
I'm with you on that, yeah.
Including just existing or going to school or trying to fit in or play baseball. It's like, wow, you don't need to have a dad show up to be able to get a spot at a comedy club. This is perfect. See you later, Billy Witherspurrow. Go to the ha-ha.
You got one arm. You can hold the mic. You had mentioned earlier, you said it's good now, your relationship with your dad. At what age and what happened? How did all that shift? And did you steer that? Is that something that just came about?
It's something I've always steered. I'm the one that always reaches out. It was never bad, though. That's the interesting thing, is I've always been respectful, and I fucking get it. You know what I mean? I fucking get it. He was fucking my mom. He never would have guessed that she could get pregnant at 38 or that he'd get her pregnant at 38. They probably had a pretty good pull-out method. He probably fucked her, shot on her tits, and then shoved it back in a little too quick with a little too much semen on the little tippy top there one
that's
time.
Your, that's your.
That's just me hanging out, just trying to fucking keep balance. Like, let's do this. Shoved it back in. Probably thought she would get an abortion. Probably thought she would take care of it from the gist of it, from what I heard, which is definitely something. That's one of the things that I wish I wasn't told as a kid. Like, my mom told me way too much when I broke the news at 10 or 11. Like, and one of the things was like, yeah, you know, your dad wanted me to get the abortion, but I didn't. I'm like, all right, that's enough. Like, that's enough. Stop there.
That is a shitload for a 10-year-old.
Stop it. I'm 10, lady. I didn't need to know that. Can you give me just a few years on some of this? I know you want to be the cool mom, be the honest one, but yeah. So, you know, I guess maybe it's just the...
Like, you were always ready whenever it was going to happen, basically. You were ready to talk to him or see him whenever.
And always ready for things to be cool. And I've always...
I mean, you could have been that kid in high school that went over and trashed the house, fucked with his car, fucked with his business.
It's the opposite. I probably tell him that I forgive him, you know, once every year or two, even though it's unsolicited advice.
We talk about nothing.
We have nothing in common. How's the restaurant? Oh, good. It's been busy. Not so busy. Ah, how's the comedy thing? Oh, good. Just did a crazy show in an amphitheater with Dave Chappelle last week. I have an arena with Rogan coming up this weekend. I don't know who those guys are.
I know, right?
Sounds good though. Sounds like it's good. You ever see Dice out there? I'm like, yeah, Dice is actually one of my friends. He calls me Tony when he sees me. He says, hey, Tony, what's going on? Oh, that's so cool. All right, well, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, nah.
I got to wrap it up, man. I got dough to get.
But I'll tell him sometimes just because I think he plays it cool, but I feel like it's got to affect him in some way, you know, all that stuff. So I just always let him know. I'm the opposite. I never started a fight with him about it. I never complained about anything.
But when did you actually have their first conversation about it?
Oh, that was almost immediate. You know, once she told me everything, he came over and started doing damage control. Now, Tony, you can't tell anybody about this. Don't tell anybody about that. Don't tell your friends. But again, that's the part where even though I respected him and loved him and this and that, like I couldn't not tell people. Like it got to the point where it was insane. Kids I was hanging out with hundreds of days a year, you know, I wouldn't just lie to them. I would tell them, yeah, my dad's this. They cheated on my mom and, you know, my mom and dad cheated on each other's significant others and blah, 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 blah. And that's how I was made. And, you know, back then it was sort of embarrassing, you know, because kids don't get that. They're not like,
right.
Oh, wow.
Were there any other kids like you in your school that you could even talk to about that?
No, because here's the crazy part is Youngstown was so dangerous that I had to go to the private school because just simply no white
kids. And did your dad pay for that?
The public school. Well, my mom paid for it with the... money that she made from the job that my dad got her. But the kids in the private school, again, that was from mostly suburbs, and they mostly all went to this private school in the super dangerous neighborhood because of tradition, because like their parents went there and their older brothers and sisters went there. It was not a brilliant decision to be sending kids to this school anyway, because even though it's safe, it's like the... You know, it's like that area right between North and South Korea where nothing happens.
Right,
you
know, yeah.
The school is just like there's shit going on both sides of it. And I guess it was safe, but not outside. Not outside the building, it wasn't safe.
So you were a wrestler. You were a high school wrestler. Mm-hmm. You were fucking good, though, weren't you?
I was pretty good for my level of experience. Yeah. I mean, Ohioans are really tough. A lot of them get started at 3, 4, 5. So I had
like
to
Iowa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I had to really learn quick, and I don't really have the best build for wrestling. So that was sort
you
of tough.
Like, you think of that lanky leg rider build.
It's actually the opposite. I'm lanky. You're right, but it was one of those things to where I liked being more unorthodox. I had a crazy head arm, crazy fireman's carry, good hip toss, just fucking.
You're like a praying mantis. Exactly. Like I wouldn't be able. Yeah.
Right. It's one of those things. Very deceptive. Like I'd have to use my brains. I had a great, great coach.
Did that help you with the anger? See, it helped me too. Wrestling helped. Oh, one-on-one, you get to just. You either take the beating, and that beating never hurt as much as the shit you were suffering in fucking life anyway. Like, I don't care.
Exactly.
Or you just took it out on somebody, and it felt fucking great.
Right.
Yeah. And it's one-on-one.
Took a lot of good beatings. Luckily, you know, again, that sometimes it's good when your dad's not at your sporting events. You know what I mean?
Imagine that's the one he shows up to, and you're pinned.
I'm just getting pinned. I'm like, Dada! No! It's not always like this. He's just walking out like, no, come back. So, yeah, I mean, that was great. And having all the interest here, one of the cool things that I think I've really noticed in my life is I've had an unbelievable line of mentors, father figures, really like a dream list. If the child me could have drawn it up, I mean, it's crazy what's happened. And I think a lot of that's just sort of those types of energies, like of the universe or whatever. Maybe I ate too much mushrooms last week and I'm not making sense, but like, it's like, you know, what are the odds that the guy that had to deal with this, while all my friends had normal dads that were there and at their events and caring for them and eating dinner with them every night and this and that, what are the odds that, you know, Rowdy Roddy Piper shows up at the Comedy Store and the night that I'm working and makes friends with me? What are the odds that Dave Attell is at that Starbucks that I'm working at when I very first start stand-up, and then he sees me that night working at the Comedy Store and we build a friendship? And Jeff Ross with the thing, and he's watching late night when I'm there and we become friends. And Rogan out of nowhere, you know, I'm doing an Ice House Chronicles podcast, and he asks Red Band who that kid is, and he tells him, oh, he's been a new paid regular at the Comedy Store, takes me on the road, blah, 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 blah. Like, Chappelle, working with him, and all these cool, there's a lot of them. You know, Ralphie May absolutely loved me. We were very close. And so many of these amazing people, and I'm leaving a lot of great ones out. Brody Stevens, another one, really took me under his wing, taught me so much shit that changed my career, changed my life, changed my attitude of thinking from instead of being such a person who loved dwelling on the negativity and being overly competitive in stand-up. He opened my mind to just being more positive and, you know.
I mean, that was his mantra.
Right. Enjoying the process, all these things.
So he really helped you not just with comedy, but that's a lot of childhood shit that's there for that all that reason.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Big time. Big time. And all these guys really took interest, you know. I have a really great relationship with
It's always funny to me how the degenerates usually help the other degenerates.
Yeah.
We get each other.
Yeah.
Support each other.
Yeah.
That's great. I didn't know that about Brody. That's awesome.
Yeah. No, for sure. I mean, there's times to where I can pinpoint exact gigs that I wouldn't have gotten, that I would have fucked up had I said what I would have said if I didn't have that tweak of, you know, be nice to people, Tony. You got to be nice. You can do the jokes when it counts, but off stage, you know, you don't need people to fear you. Let it build to that. Pick your moments with that, but it doesn't have to be a constant. Don't be an asshole to everybody and everything, you know? So he really drove that into my head. I mean, over years and for no reason. He had no reason to. Back then, it wasn't even, you got to remember, back then it wasn't even like this huge comedy boom. Nobody
at
really,
all.
Right.
Yeah, it was nothing like
that. So it was
now.
Literally like, you know, I mean, this guy must be right. He's in the Hangover. He's in, you know, making another Hangover.
Cut out a funny
people. Right, exactly. and I believed it, you know, and it really did. It helped me a lot. All those guys did. Rowdy Roddy Piper taught me stuff that I can't even believe. You know what I mean? Again, he taught me things that exactly had I not done certain things, I know which things I wouldn't have gotten from having great advice from a mentor-like figure like that. And I trace a lot of that as a yin and yang to my crazy childhood. It's like,
it definitely
can't be a coincidence that I had that wacky, you know, no dad stuff, very, very aware of it from a young age. And now I have, I don't know, there's something about me that draws people want to help me help myself. So it's really cool. I don't know.
Yeah, it's great. Mm-hmm. What, when you first moved out here to do comedy, what was that like?
Well, that's a fun thing because I'm one of the all-time most broke starting out comedians ever. So, like, I had nothing. I mean, nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I was living on my brother's futon. He lived in Burbank in a one-bedroom apartment, and that's how it started. So I would get, I had a bicycle at the time, and I would ride my bicycle to the train station at Universal Studios, take it to Hollywood Highland, and bicycle to the Comedy Store, and
wow,
bicycle to all these open mics. Yeah. And but I didn't want people to know at the Comedy Store that I was, that I had a bicycle. So I would park next door at the Andaz in their fancy parking lot, because I felt like if people knew that I had a bicycle, that they would make fun of me or something like that. And so that's interesting. And then it began. The bicycle broke, and my brother basically gave me a timeline to get the fuck out of his apartment. And so it really began. I moved into a small two-bedroom apartment that five comedians were living in, and I was on a beanbag and a couch and sometimes just the floor, you know what I mean? Like, and it was a real struggle. And then from there, because I really couldn't even pay that rent, I was working at the Comedy Store as a door guy and working the phones during the day. And back then, the Comedy Store, not only did they not pay properly, but they would cut your hours unapologetically, which is fine because who cares? Because that's not what I was doing it for anyway. I didn't care at all. But at the same time, I wouldn't have enough money to survive, literally. So I couldn't really afford that. And at that point, I ended up getting a car that was given to me from my brother and I's friend, who had an extra 92 Ford Taurus. And he gave me the car, and I used that as my new lodging. I slept in that
car.
You did? Yeah.
Where would you park to sleep?
I would park right behind the Comedy Store in the alleyway. I'd have everything folded and nice in my trunk, and everything's clean and organized. And I would work a shift at Starbucks sometimes to start from like 7 to 11 a.m., and then I'd work phones at the Comedy Store trying to sell tickets to people who called in to the Comedy Store, because back then they didn't even have a frickin' website.
Really?
So people would just call and they'd be like, are you guys open tonight? And I'd be like, oh, an unbelievable show. You never know who could pop in. Like, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
back then it was no one. Like, if I said, like, Chappelle could pop in, I would be the biggest liar on the planet, because there was no chance Chappelle was realistically popping in. But I'd say it. I'd sell tickets because I always looked at it like, hey, these people, we need these people here. I mean, it was freaking empty, man. There was a period where the Comedy Store could have collapsed at one point easily. And so I'd work that shift, and then I'd work at the door. Once the door would open up, I'd get off phones and I'd put on my T-shirt and I'd work there until 2:30 a.m. And then I'd sleep in my car from like 3 to 6:30. And then I'd shower at the Comedy Store, go to Starbucks, and do it again the next day.
Damn.
Over and over and over again. All the while learning and writing and absorbing information and learning how to improvise late night with Don Barris and all these other crazy things that were happening. And everything that I learned, it was in those hours of late night at the Comedy Store, and really struggling. Again, especially monetarily, like I was surviving. One of the crazy habits I have now is I spend vast sums of money on food.
Like, me too.
I am admittedly a disgusting animalistic pig. I've had sushi like five times in the last 3 days. Yeah.
Okay, you got
yeah,
me.
I'm
beat.
Scary,
yeah.
Dude. And it's not shitty sushi either. And by the way, I'm not ordering too much. I'm ordering way too much.
Right.
I have a serious problem. And I think that stems from this period of time, which is I was surviving off of a footlong every day, $5 footlong, 6 inches for lunch, 6 inches for dinner. You did?
Mm-hmm. $5 pizzas. And I would just eat that over the course of the day and stuff.
Yeah, I would load up my Subway sub I mean, just with stuff I don't even like. Yeah, sure, mushrooms, tomatoes, raw onions and the
Give
this.
Me all
They're like, really? You want all of it? All of it. Because these are my only nutrients. This is my one shot to have anything. Yes, lettuce. Yes, spinach. Yes, yes, yes. Sure, absolutely. And it was like my only food. So, you know, every single day, $5 footlong. Luckily, working at Starbucks helped me with my coffee budget because I could just get coffee from there. But I also back then needed a pack of cigarettes to be able to write and to really feel like I was, you know, in the zone. So that was a big budgetary thing. And those were some of the best days of my life, though. I was about to become a professional comedian and writer, and I had nothing but singular focus on what was happening. I was fully aware that I was blowing by my peers who did have money, who did have a comfortable bed, who were waking up and flipping on their TV, and they had laptops, so they'd go scan the internet and this and that, while I literally would snag a newspaper from the Starbucks, literally have to read over news stories. Didn't have to, but again, this was just part of my writing process, and I would sit there with a pen and paper behind the Comedy Store and write. Back before there was...
In your car.
No, there used to be like a little school desk type of thing there. Before it was fancy with benches and fancy lighting, there was like one little trashy, dirty school desk that I was happy, honored to get to sit in. Honored to have the opportunity to work at a place that so many greats have worked. And, you know, when I got there, again, it was a very toxic situation. There were not bubbly young door guys that were promising. It was a bunch of angry, bitter guys in their 40s and 50s that thought the comedy was never coming back. They thought the Comedy Store was about to be a parking lot. They would say these things and I would get mad at them. And I saw that it was just all there for the taking. I'm like, these guys aren't fucking working. They think everything's negative. They think everything's toxic. So they're not putting any effort in. They're not getting any better. They think they're not learning anything from anybody. They just called that guy a hack and they think that guy's a hack and this and that. So they're not, you know what I mean? They have they have no hope. And that excited me. I think that's one of the things not a lot of people talk about is like you go to an open mic and you see how much people suck and that should fucking fire you up.
It should.
It really should because it's like, wow, I just started and I'm already like second best.
Right.
I'm second best already. What the fuck's going to happen next week? I'm second best my first time. That guy's been doing it 4.5 years.
Right.
And I'm right on his heels.
Same set.
Right. And I'm right on his heels with nothing, you know. So
but see, I think about it all the time. Like if I didn't have the situation I had growing up, and I can tell you're the same way, especially you say I wouldn't change a thing, but that adversity, it builds everything. I don't think I'd be here if one of those things was possibly different, you know? So you're right. You know, for me, it was my own mother telling me she hated me and I'm a loser. I was like, there's nothing any fucking critic or comment anybody out there could make that's going to hurt or bother me any more than that shit ever fucking did.
And any psychiatrist or psychologist would agree with you. Any one of them. I mean, there's in the teachers that told me that making fun of people is never going to get me anywhere. That's why... That's why, like,
you got a show on it.
I'm not going to say what it is, but the customized plate on my obnoxious 2019 8-speed Corvette has to do with roasting. Like, the reason why is because that's what that car represents to me, is I did this just by making fun of people. This is just from making fun of people money. Not my podcast, not stand-up comedy. This is... You know, writing on the last 6 or 7 Comedy Central roasts and doing 2 seasons of roast battle and, you know, doing private roasts and writing for corporate roasts and all these things. It's like that is because they told me that. If they were like, yes, make fun of people, I'd be like, fuck you, nerd. Right, I don't want to make fun of it. Now it's not cool. Now I'm never making fun of anybody again because fucking, you know. Mr. Gilmartin told me that to make fun of people, that would ruin it for me. Instead, it's the opposite. When you're told that stuff as a kid, and you know what I mean? all that, to me, it was like, well, that must be...
It was fuel.
Yeah, that must be the most exciting thing. Yeah. Right, exactly. And, you know, again, the Corvette, the how I eat now, the nice apartment, you know, all these things, it's all... I can't imagine how miserable people that grew up with money and grew up spoiled and never had to worry about anything. Like, what do you appreciate? Right. What a boring, numb life you
existence,
must live.
Yeah.
Ugh, you always had the new toys, really? Well, I mean, what? Then what? And I know what it is. Those are the people that end up doing hard drugs, right?
Yeah.
Those people with fucking perfect little lives, all daisies and roses.
Problems.
They had the N64 when it came out. They had the new PlayStation when it came out. How do you chase that? You know how do they chase it? It's fucking disgusting, hard drugs that lead to serious addictions and serious problems later on in life. That's just something that I've noticed. But, like, you know, not all of them are like that. Some of them just stay boring and just live boring lives. But some of them try to chase those dragons instead of having anything of any real satisfaction or growth or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Well said.
Yeah. I love it, though. I wouldn't, again.
Well, I'm proud of you, dude. Yeah, look at what you've done for yourself. Your show, Kill Tony, is so fucking successful. I love seeing Rogan and Ron White and all these guys talk it up when they're on the show and you guys aren't even there. I think it's fantastic, dude.
Yeah, we're having a blast, man. It's really exciting.
Yeah, we've had Red Band on. We've had Jeremiah on.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're helping a lot of people there, and it's a fun thing where we bust a lot of balls on that show, but there's also a lot of heart and a lot of care, and we're trying to help people and give them big opportunities too. So it's fun to have a chance to be mean and also give back at the same time and help people.
You're doing great things, dude.
Thanks,
thank you for coming on here.
You.
I really appreciate you opening up about all that.
Thank
shit.
You, of course. That's one of the greatest laughs I've had in my entire life is your I'll walk over. Oh my God.
Thank you.
My mom's going to listen to this and she's going to fucking die of laughter. I'm honestly afraid that you might kill my mom with that line. It's unbelievable.
Will you please one more time promote anything you'd like?
Kill Tony every Monday night at the Comedy Store. It streams live on YouTube. We're doing our biggest annual event coming up in just a couple weeks. It's Kill Tony Mania out of San Francisco. And we are going to New York, D.C., Australia, Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, and so many other great places. TonyHinchcliffe.com. A lot of fun stuff happening. A lot of stand-up dates, too. You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but the Netflix isn't exactly kicking down the door for straight white males to do one-hour specials right now. So my stand-up comedy is extremely well worked on right now because I have no outlet for it. So it's a very fun set. If you haven't seen me perform on the road and do a longer set, I highly recommend that because I'm one of the top young rising comedians in the world. So
that's the truth. That's the truth, brother. Your dad might not say that, but goddamn it, I will.
Yeah.
I am Ryan Sickler on all social media, ryansickler.com. We'll talk to you all next week.